I think the first thing that people actually neglect is the healing process. If you are trying to connect, but there's hurt feelings, there's been broken trust, there's been just a lot of like maybe emotional laziness, things like that, crossed boundaries, you actually have to repair that in order to move forward.
For the mom with her hands full and only a few minutes to spare here and there, put your hand on your chest. Take a deep breath. You're doing better than you think you are. I want you to delight in these ordinary, often mundane days of motherhood, rooted in confidence about how you are raising and speaking to and nurturing your kids. Peace starts with you. So let's create peaceful safe havens for our kids to grow in. It's never too late, and the fact that you are here speaks volumes of the amazing mom that you are and desire to be.
Okay, you guys, I am so excited to introduce you guys to our guest speakers this week. I have Megan and Casey Kasten, and they are part of Marriage 365. To be a good mom, it really takes having, and this isn't a requirement, but having a good, solid, strong marriage helps in so many ways. It helps you show up as a better mom when you have that support and that connection. And so when I reached out to them and they were willing to jump on a podcast and share their wisdom, I was like, game on, like, let's go. So grateful. And so I look up to you guys so much. I love how real and raw and honest and funny you guys are. And so we have Megan and Casey on with us today. And I would love for you guys to just share maybe a little bit about your story. I heard something the other day and it said, you are most qualified to help the person you used to be. And when I logged on to your guys' website the first time, I saw meet the couple least likely to succeed in marriage. I mean, I feel like that's so relatable because how many other marriages are in that same boat? And so if you guys would be open to like just sharing your story, the hope of your story, because you guys show up now and it's just like, oh, I just admire you and look up to you. And you guys help so many people. Like I see the reviews, I see people responding, and you guys have a huge platform for just marriage and healthy, strong marriages.
Thanks for having us, Brooklyn. You're so sweet.
Thanks, Brooklyn. When you say that, it still shocks me. I think that we would be marriage experts because, you know, I look back at our first years of marriage and we were so terrible at it. And I mean, our story kind of started out like a lot of people. We met in college, we dated, it was super fun, super easy. And when we walked down the aisle, I mean, I honestly thought love is just going to win us, you know, carry us through the day and it's just going to happen and it's going to be amazing because dating was amazing. And little did we know that all of our childhood junk and past and our, the things that, you know, we normalized that were actually really toxic all came to like show up in a huge way. So my mom's been married actually 6 times. So I grew up in chaos and I brought all of that chaos into our marriage. And starting on day one, actually on our honeymoon night, I slept on the couch because I threw a temper tantrum and it all just started to reveal itself in such a horrible way. The way we fought, the way we screamed and yelled and the words we used. And it was very, very, very bad. And it was like a sprint to the bottom. By year three, we hated each other. We literally hated each other. And I'll never forget. This was years later. We're doing Marriage 365. We're on stage and Megan drops this without warning me. She's like, you know, secretly, I was actually praying that God would just take my husband so that way I didn't have to divorce him. That's how bad it was.
That's so real.
How bad.
And I was like, wow,
you know, that's bad. You know, just to warn you with me, I mean, sometimes I have a filter, sometimes I don't. Looking back, we had no tools. We had no techniques. We just really, like Casey said, winged it. We thought that love was enough. So then when it wasn't, we were stuck with hurt, immaturity, not knowing how to heal, communicate, all of those things. And really the story turns around where I wanted the divorce more than he did. And my girlfriend said, you know, hey, that's a massive decision. You need to make sure you go see someone before you make that decision that's an expert. And so I saw a therapist by myself. And she said, hey, listen, have you done everything and anything you can to save your marriage so you don't live with regret? And I knew my answer was no. And she says, I can show you how to be a healthy wife. I can show you how to be a great communicator and set boundaries. And that's what I did. And so for 13 months, I worked on myself and stopped worrying so much about what Casey was doing and wasn't doing because I have control issues. I like to call myself a recovering control freak. I'm still working on it. And he noticed the change in me. Yeah. And so we were able to turn our marriage around. You know, I say this because it's important to know it wasn't just like a couple months. It was years of repairing and healing and growing and learning. And I feel like even now we're celebrating 20 years of marriage. We're still learning and healing and growing because you always are in relationships.
I think the real watershed for that moment was when, because Megan and I, we would both fight like just as bad. It was like a, it was a race to the, you know, who's the worst fighter. But when she started to change, you know, she didn't allow the toxic behavior to continue any further. And I think it became really, really evident, you know, after watching her grow and change that I was the toxic one. And now there was no excuse. I would look at the mirror and I'd realize like, okay, she changed for the better. Now it's time for me to change.
And so fast forward a few years later, and we were just thinking, gosh, we were frustrated because we couldn't afford ongoing therapy. It's awesome, but it's expensive. And so what else is out there for couples who are struggling in the relationship or who are even on the journey of healing? And there wasn't really anything. And so that's actually what and why we created Marriage 365. We wanted a really vulnerable, healthy place where couples could learn and grow, ask questions, but it's at a very practical nature, right? We don't want just, well, Megan, you need to forgive and you need to communicate. I know all that, but how do I do those things?
And I love that because I feel like there was one point in my husband's marriage where we talked about going to see a counselor. And our biggest argument is always around parenthood and kids and how we're parenting and disciplining. And so I was just like, at what point are we just going to agree? We're not going to agree. So let's go talk to someone that can help us. But I have three boys. And so I was like, how do we make the time to go to counseling? And you know, it was a lot of things. So I love how on your website, it's like, you have it all right there. Someone doesn't have to take the extra time to go to see a counselor or how much it's going to cost. I love that about what you guys offered. And you guys basically created a system for what you needed. You're like, hey, we need this. It's not out there. So let's create it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the advice that we wish we would have had before we got married in those first few years of marriage.
And honestly, if there was something else like it out there, we'd probably be promoting it instead of creating our own. But because we were like, saw this huge, massive void of, you know, no one wants to raise their hand and say, oh, hey, I'm the dude that struggles with porn, or hey, we're in a sexless marriage, or hey, my spouse isn't standing up for me in front of my wife. What do I do? These are really intimate, embarrassing, shame-filled conversations that people don't want to have with somebody else. So we've created this like space where you could ask the most embarrassing question, get the answers without anybody knowing.
I did a sex question box on my Instagram. The stories I got, the amount of vulnerability and the amount that people opened up, I was like, this is amazing, because I feel like people need a place where they can do that. But they were also, I get messages asking for advice and I'm like, well, yeah, I'm married, but I'm like, I don't have that like knowledge and that wisdom to actually help you. So when you guys said, hey, we'll get on a podcast with you, I was like, wow. Like, and then to be able to give people that resource of, hey, go to their website and check out what they have to offer. I've read some of the reviews. They're like, this changed our marriage.
I promise not to go too deep down this rabbit hole. And it's probably another topic for a conversation or a podcast, but I do believe the soup that we all swim in right now is a culture that doesn't support healthy relationship behavior, doesn't support healthy sexual conversations and in a way that produces good connection between couples. I think that we're now kind of in a place where a lot of people are lost and there's not a lot of great places to turn towards. So
I feel like we're just starting to, as a culture, to talk about emotional, mental, and relational health, but we've got a long way to go. Yeah. That's our day-to-day thing that we do at Marriage 365. We want people to be emotionally healthy, relationally healthy, and mentally healthy.
Yeah. And I think there's so much input that it can be really distracting. People don't know where to start. So to be able to be like, hey, here's a place to start, lock out the other distractions and see what happens. I feel like that's very powerful. We have three topics that we want to like cover, and they have to do with parenting specifically. So the first one is having a strong marriage in the midst of parenting and setting yourself up for success. Because I know a lot of people that have messaged me, they're like, well, we had a great marriage and then we had kids and it just doesn't feel strong, or it feels disconnected. Or, I mean, there's so many different scenarios, but basically having a strong marriage in the midst of the chaos of parenting and how to set yourself up for success.
We're deciding who wants to go, because we
both— why don't you go first?
We both have a lot to say.
Yeah. Megan is the better parent.
I'll take it all the wisdom.
Okay. So here's one thing I would tell any parent, is that it's impossible for you and your spouse to agree with everything in your marriage and then with everything with parenting. It's literally impossible. So if you are going into a conversation and you think that you are going to align with how to discipline, or, you know, which school they should go to, or do we homeschool? Do we do private school? Whatever that is, you're going to have differing opinions, feelings, thoughts. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a great way just to go into a conversation with your spouse. Okay. It's okay to agree to disagree. Casey and I are very different. In fact, if you learn anything about Marriage 365 and us, you will hear us repeatedly say we are more different than alike.
And that creates a lot of humor in life.
and produces a lot of patience.
Yeah, that's where we get most of the material for Marriage 365.
100%. We're very different. We're both strong-willed. That's probably the one thing we have in common. And so when we approach parenting, it's very different. The other thing I would say is that you need to look actually back at your childhood, and you want to look back at your spouse's childhood. What was normalized? What was healthy? What was unhealthy? What was modeled to them? I know you're really good, Brooklyn, at talking about that. Like, what we model for our children, like, you can lecture your kids, but it's only going to go so far. What are you modeling day to day? And so think about back in your childhood, what was modeled to you? Because I don't even think we recognize that our past does impact how we parent. It absolutely impacts how we show up as parents. And so all of those things is that kind of awareness part of marriage. Two people who are very aware usually can resolve conflict, come together, even if they disagree. It's the lack of awareness that causes a lot of arguments. Gosh, why is my husband responding this way to our kid? Why is she talking that way? Oh, it's because of this from their childhood, or that's what her mom did, or that's what her parents used to do. And so there's so much awareness that I would recommend having. Marriage 365, we have a ton of resources that will walk you through those kinds of things. But even just asking those simple questions of your spouse, tell me more about your childhood, will give you some kind of an idea of why they're showing up the way they are as a parent.
Okay. And I have three things I want to say. First is, kids need a strong base, right? That is the base in which they can launch into life. And that strong base is their heroes, mom and dad. They idolize their parents. I remember growing up, and when my mom and my dad split, I had recurring dreams and nightmares, frankly, of like, could they get back together again? Like, even when my mom was remarried, it's like, could the parent trap actually be my story? I have a little PTSD with that movie, because I always thought maybe my parents would come back together again. And that was my dream. Our kids idolize us, and we need to be a strong base for them. Number two is, I think that we're modeling behavior for our kids, how we embrace conflict, how we talk to each other, how we affirm one another in front of our kids, using kind words or apologizing. These are all modeling behaviors for healthy life. And you can't do that unless you have your marriage straightened out. So what I would say is, please don't lie to yourself that I can be a good parent and have a crappy marriage. Mm-hmm. That does not work. So you could be sitting there and saying, well, at least I'm a present mom or dad. Okay, that's great. But if you're neglecting your marriage in any way, it will impact the kids. Okay, that's really, really important. And then the next thing I'd want to just say is, really speak to dads. And I don't know, maybe the moms can pour this on to the dads. But two things is, really, first of all, get curious with your kids by asking them good open-ended questions. Just sit with them and ask them about their day. And if you don't know what questions to ask, Google it. We have a book. You can Google it. There's ways to ask open-ended questions to get your kids talking. And then the last thing I just want to say is something that I personally struggle with, and I constantly am working with this, is the idea of just being present with your kids. Now, I am someone who is moving from one stimulus to the next. I am either working on something, I'm checking emails, I'm, you know, this is happening, I'm just one fun moment to the next. But being present when there's really not much happening is a struggle for me. And one of the things I've realized over the past couple months is the fact that the reason why it's a struggle for me to be present with my kids is because I'm unwilling to be present with myself. And until you can actually be present with yourself, one of the exercises and things that I've been doing lately that has been really hard and really good is I spend 5 minutes a day doing nothing. So this isn't like napping. This is 5 minutes. I go outside, sit in a chair and stare at clouds. And I'm just being present. It's like mindfulness practice of just like listening to my breath, thinking about what am I thinking about? And if I'm not thinking about anything, that's fine. But just being present with myself has actually helped me walk into the room when the kids are doing something mundane, like homework, chores, there's really nothing going on, or it's bedtime, and I can be present with them because I carried that moment of those 5 minutes into just being present with that kid. So,
man, I love that so much because I feel like it's so hard for anyone to be present in this day and age. Like, it's just hard. And so you're like focused on myself and bringing that presence. And I also liked, Megan, how you said in the beginning, I can't remember when you said it, but you said like, I changed myself first. And then because of that, then it was like a ripple effect and it went into my marriage. Oh, so many good things. Can't be a good parent and have a crappy marriage, and neglecting your marriage in any way, it'll affect our kids. Oh, so good. Like all of it.
Yeah. And let me add, I think on a practical level, because we're a very practical couple, you know, we recommend couples doing something called the weekly marriage business meeting. And that is where it's a once a week meeting. It's 30 minutes to 60 minutes. We have a worksheet at Marriage 365 if you need it, but you're really talking about all the non-sexy parts of marriage.
What's it called? Weekly marriage?
The weekly marriage business meeting.
Okay.
And what you do is you go through schedules, you go through alone time, date nights, you go through meal planning, and you really are kind of just checking in and you're looking at the week forward and you're saying, what do we need to plan and prepare for? How are you doing? Can I help you with anything? What do we need? You know, anything, finances, what you know, your mom's birthday's coming up. I need to buy her a birthday present. I mean, anything like that, the logistics of life. But here's the key is if couples were to do the weekly marriage business meeting and they were to check in with each other every single week, they would be able to coordinate and plan time just for them too. Mm. The thing is that most couples wing it. Mm-hmm. And they think, well, after the kids go to bed, we'll just watch TV. Well, that's okay every once in a while, but that's going to actually make you grow apart emotionally. And so this is you planning, when's our date night? Or hey, on Tuesday night, once the kids go to bed, what if we take a walk around the block, or we play a card game. Like right now we're really into Yahtzee. So we've played Yahtzee like every night for the last
I'm on a losing streak.
Yes. And so, you know, you have to plan that time, especially if you're really busy, you've got multiple kids, schedules and sports. And for us, mm-hmm. we have teenagers, their schedules will rule and overtake your marriage mm-hmm. if you let it, but you don't have to allow it. And I think I always about if anyone who, you know, is a working mom or, you know, you've been in the corporate America or whatnot, every company has meetings and you have your meeting and you're checking in, and that's when you're, you know, things are brought up and you're able to ask questions and plan and brainstorm together. So why aren't we doing this in marriage, right? The companies who win in marriage are planning. Mm-hmm. We need a plan. And so we always say this, this quote is one that I can't take credit for it, but I say it a lot. And I don't know who came up with it, but most couples do not plan to fail, but fail to plan. And that weekly marriage business meeting is you saying, hey, like for us, we do it Sunday nights. Sunday nights is our time. We go through our schedules and our calendars and we look at everything. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing because when we do that, we're much more aligned. There's less arguments. The kids know we're a team.
Well, we're setting the right expectations. That's the thing, is the unrealistic expectations, which I tend to have.
Yes.
Are like, this is what's going to happen. And, or walking into the day going, what, wait, where are we going? We would always say that hope is not a strategy. So don't just hope that you're going to get to it or hope that we are on the same page or aligned. Hope is not a strategy when it comes to marriage. You have to think through these things.
Let me give you a classic story. So I used to say to Casey in passing, like I'd be doing the dishes or whatnot, hey babe, don't forget to take the kids to water polo. And then he would forget. And I'd be mad. And I'd be like, I told you. And he's like, I don't remember. And I thought, well, I looked at you and we recognize this is what couples do. They'd have a lot of conversations back and forth, a lot of details. And what's happening is nothing's written down. Mm. Nothing's on a calendar. And so I know Casey's a big advocate for this. I agree. I think every couple should have a shared calendar. I think you should be seeing what's going on. Even tasks like take kids to water polo practice. It's color coordinated. It's very clear. So there's just not these little missed expectations and disappointments. And it's really about teamwork, and it's exciting. And I will say husbands love this. because typically they feel like I can do this in my marriage and do it well.
My husband just said, can we get a big calendar? So I went to Target, got a big calendar, and it's actually, it's nice to like see the month at a glance and to just know like, okay, wait, I had that on there. I know you saw it. And it also reminds me of, I just started meal planning my meals and I put it off for the longest time because I knew it just took effort. Took sitting down. It takes me a good amount of time to like plan out my meals, then my grocery list. It has helped me tremendously just in my peace throughout the week and just my planning ahead. So it does take a little bit of effort up front, but man, it makes the biggest difference. And I think going back to everything you guys just said, it's like a level of intention and communication.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I'm definitely downloading the weekly marriage business meeting. I feel like that we do something called Team. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's just something we saw going around. My husband sent it to me on Instagram, you know, like a sponsored ad maybe. And so every night before you go to bed or find some time, and you go through this acronym, T-E-A-M. And the first one's touch. You have to be touching. The second one is ease education. It's something that you learned. Sounds weird, but it's like you don't realize what kind of conversation that can spark. So education and then affirmation, something that you appreciate that they did. And then the last one's called matrix. And it's kind of like something that bothered you. So if something happens during the day that bothers you, trying not to address it right in that moment when you're like in the heat of it. And then, you know, bringing it up at night and talking through it. And sometimes you just laugh about it because it's like not even a big deal. So it kind of reminds me of the same thing, although this is like a little bit more planning and like the logistics. When we were doing it consistently, I'm like, I feel like we've gotten to some really good conversations rather than just laying in bed and scrolling on our phones.
Yes.
So that's really helpful.
And a little fun fact, if you meal plan as a family, studies have shown that you save anywhere between $1,000 and $2,000 a month.
Wow.
Because you've already made your decisions and you already have the food versus like at 5 o'clock, like for us, we both work full time. Who's going to cook? I don't know. Okay, let's eat out. And bam, that's $150, right? And you're like, dang, how much money did we just spend? And that's what happens with families because it's decision-making in the moment when someone's tired. And so yes, on the weekly marriage business meeting, we have a meal plan section and it's phenomenal. Yeah.
I'm going to download it. Okay. Second topic was, what do you do when you feel distant and need to regain like what has been lost? Which I know, I feel like any marriage, any wife, any husband at some point, especially when there's kids involved, you feel like, man, like that connection's gone. And I feel like sometimes you feel it off and on, like it's just not always a constant blissful feeling. What would be your suggestions if someone is sitting here listening to this and they're like, man, I just feel like there's no connection between me and my husband. And I just, for instance, what we were talking about earlier, like I haven't had sex in say months. How do I, and now when I go to like initiate it, I feel nervous or what would you guys say to that person?
Yeah, I would say, first off, you are not alone because marriage is hard. It's two people with different personalities and struggles and insecurities and expectations, and then throw those kids in the mix and it just gets really complicated. And we all have off days and bad days and really difficult seasons. I mean, to be perfectly honest, we're in a really difficult season in our marriage. We have our ups and downs too. And we even have all the knowledge and the tools in our tool belt. But so that'd be the first thing I would say is you're not alone. I think the first thing that people actually neglect is the healing process. If you are trying to connect, but there's hurt feelings, there's been broken trust, there's been just a lot of like maybe emotional laziness, things like that, crossed boundaries, you actually have to repair that in order to move forward. And so at Marriage 365, Casey and I too, we're really big on repairing and healing because these couples will go on vacation or they'll do a date night and they think that that's going to solve it. And those things are great things, but then underneath the surface is still hurt. And if you don't fix that and you're not intentional, then those feelings, it's going to come out, right? Resentment's going to build. And so the first thing we always tell couples is to check in and make sure and just ask the question, is there anything I need to apologize for? Because sometimes we hurt a lot of times we hurt our spouse and we don't even know we hurt our spouse, right? It was like a snarky remark that we didn't think was a big deal, but they've been sitting with that for weeks or months. And so actually giving the opportunity to say, is there anything I need to apologize for? Is there anything in our marriage where we need to repair and heal? 95% of the time there is something that needs to be healed. And that really is one of those things that is so vital to a healthy marriage.
And if they're in that place, if they go to Marriage 365, there are resources on there. Like say that they're there's infidelity or no trust, they can go on there and get that support.
We have hours and hours of video that will give them step-by-step guides on how do you apologize? What's the proper way to do the apology process? How do you rebuild trust with one another? I think that most spouses wake up, I'd say 95% of us wake up and do the best that we know how. Mm-hmm. We don't wake up thinking, you know what? How do I really screw with my wife's brain? You know, or how do I really hurt my spouse today? You know, what's interesting is we interpret their movements and their actions as being spiteful, hateful. And especially if we have some sort of hurt that we're holding on to, even sometimes something that's deep that happened years ago, but never was repaired. What happens is that gesture that was innocent turns into something that we receive as something negative, you know, and that, oh, that they're being snarky with me because they hate me. Yeah. And we start to create narratives. One of the things that we do is we work with couples in crisis. And most of the time, what I always say is there's two separate realities living under the same roof. There's the husband's reality, there's the wife's reality. And what happens is they just can't find the truth, like what's really happening. And so we try to do is teach compassion. And again, I look back at our own story and go, that's what I needed. I needed compassion from Megan because I had no idea how my mom's six marriages and all the different home lives that I had cooked and scrambled my brain, my value system, everything that I thought about relationships. And compassion was the key of being able to see like that other person's perspective that they're hurting, or gosh, you know what? Maybe they never got the tools needed to have a successful relationship. That's the soup that we live in today, is we don't have the tools naturally to be empathetic, to communicate calmly what we need, to even know what we need, because we're not checking in with ourselves. Because when we stand in line at Starbucks, we're staring at Instagram and not thinking, hey, how am I doing today? Or, you know, whatnot. Like we're moving from one distraction to the next.
I love how hand in hand this goes with parenting, like raising kids in this gentle, positive way, in this connection-based parenting. You're setting them up for their future relationships. It goes so hand in hand. And I actually heard something before and they said, oh, I can't remember where I heard it or how exactly it was worded, but assume that your husband, for me, assume your husband, he has the best intentions. Uh-huh. And he's not trying, you know, to do whatever I feel like he's trying to do. Like, assume that he wants the best for me. And that's helped me. And another thing is I always tell myself, okay, how do I want my boys' future wives to treat them? For some reason that helps me. I don't know if that would help anyone else, but if my husband's doing something and it's just like, oh, I'm like, I know I should do this, but I want to do this, I just say, okay, how would I want my boys' future wives to treat them in this moment? It helps me for some reason.
I love that. Let me give you a classic example of what we see daily at Marriage 365. Husband's out working a lot of hours. Wife is frustrated. She feels like she's taking care of the kids and everything else, doesn't feel that support, feels emotionally disconnected. So she thinks, well, we just need like date night, or we just need to talk about like, you know, boundaries with work or something like that. And those things are good again. Okay. So they move forward and he keeps working and he keeps working and working and working and working. And she's still getting frustrated. So the issue is actually not that he's working too much. The issue is that she feels neglected. And couples focus on, well, you need to work this many hours. Well, I need to work this many. It actually is just listen to me and validate that I'm feeling neglected, whether you agree or not. Mm-hmm. And then we look at the husband's version and he's like, but I'm the sole provider. I'm the one, I have the pressure of providing financially for my wife and my kids. And she needs to see that perspective of him. It is one right or wrong. It's just how everyone's feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's where we need to make sure that there are there's something called a four-step proper apology. I know you had mentioned, Casey, that will blow your mind because most of us were taught growing up, just say you're sorry, you know, and then there's no change of behavior. And the four-step apology allows for change of behavior. And that's a true apology. And so the couple needs to go through a four-step apology. Then they move through a process of forgiveness, and then it moves to rebuilding trust. And most couples don't know how to rebuild trust. And that's what we do at Marriage 365. And those are all those kinds of things that couples are like, oh, that's why we're not moving forward.
Right.
And that's why there's this disconnection, because we haven't really healed the rupture that happened, Because man, the second that your husband validates you, that you feel lonely and that he sees you and that must be so stressful and you must be so tired. Oh, is that healing? That's going to feel so good, right? Because he sees you and he sees the pain. But then the second that you validate him, the pressure he's feeling at work and just him just trying to hold it all together, and you validate that pain and that him being tired, oh, he's going to feel so good. And then you're going to move forward and you're going to learn how to rebuild trust and have better boundaries together as a couple.
Man, so good. Okay. Lastly, what to do when you cannot come to an agreement? And when we talked about doing this, I was thinking more of like, okay, you have kids, the mom wants to do this way of parenting and the husband just cannot wrap his brain around doing it that way. Like when you just cannot come to an agreement, and I know you kind of talked about this in the beginning, like you're not going to come to an agreement. You're not going to agree on everything, but like an actual, like, okay, I believe in gentle parenting. This was probably me and my husband when we were new parents. Our biggest struggle is like, I believe I've done research. I've read books. I have looked at child development. I want to parent this way. And he's not in agreement with that. And then, you know, that leads to like, I still want to respect him. What would you say to someone in that where you just cannot come to an agreement, whether that is with kids or with something else?
We did a whole video about actually how to make a decision as a couple where we kind of walk through step by steps on how to do that.
Maybe, can you send that to me and I'll put it in the show notes?
Sure, sure. Absolutely.
It's called The Secrets to Decision Making.
Okay. Yes, without giving too much away. I think that most couples just... they get locked into their own perspective. And again, because we don't have a lot of empathy floating out there in society, we don't know how to perspective take. And, you know, the ability for us as a couple to hear our spouse say, so why is it that you see this perspective as being the reason why you want to head in this direction? Mm-hmm. And really understand, you know, like there's the 7 habits of, you know, highly successful people is first seek to understand, then to be understood. I think what happens in marriage, we get into our positions and I need you to understand me. But first, if we were able to say, hey, can we just talk about this? So there's this A position and there's this B position, but then there's all these other choices out there that if we just start to engage your prefrontal cortex and perspective, take empathy, we would get to the creative problem solving of saying, okay, but maybe there's some other options out there that we can both win and still have connection and not just feel like, well, we're just going to do what you wanted to do.
So for example, with your scenario of your husband not wanting to do the gentle parenting, if I was your coach, I would have said, what about this? What if you both try it and attempt it for a month, and then let's do a monthly check-in and see how it's going. Pros, cons, what's working, what's not working. I agree, Casey. I think that everybody thinks, well, spouse one, this is one option. Spouse two, this is the other option, but there's just so many other options and you have to brainstorm as a couple.
Doing what you were saying, Casey, it helps you to realize, okay, we're both on the same team. We both want the best for our kids. And so it kind of changes that perspective of, it's not because I think he's doing it wrong. Like he still wants the best for our kids. So we just have different views of what that looks like.
Absolutely. And I think too, it's really good if you're ever really in like a lock where you're just, you can't see forward, make a list of all the things you do agree on. Even the basic things like we want our kids to be safe. We want our kids to have a roof over their head. I mean, it sounds silly, but you'd be shocked. You probably have more in common than you think you do, but actually put them down on a list and say, well, we want our kids to be educated. We want our kids to be in sports. We want our kids to have chores. Like all those things you probably do agree on, focus on those things too.
Yeah, I love that. So what would you say to the person listening and they don't have a husband who's even willing to listen? Would you say focus on yourself, work on yourself first? Like that's really what's in your control.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just say this. In my marriage, there's been so many times where I feel like I can't get through to Casey. He's not listening. He's not understanding. He doesn't see my perspective. But when I worry about that, that's taking up a lot of space. And that requires a lot of energy. And I have zero control over what my spouse does. Who do I have 100% control of? Me, my words, my actions, my habits, my behavior, my parenting. So I always tell when I coach women, I always say, hey, listen, if you let that go and not worry so much about what he's doing and not doing, you will be so freed up mentally and emotionally because you're not managing someone that you have no control over. You're literally in a losing battle. But if you focus on yourself, you will experience freedom, peace, more energy, more time, more happiness. And I think that in order to get your spouse to listen to you, it's not going to be necessarily conversations. It's going to be acting with love and kindness and empathy and compassion and try to get to know their perspective, and they're going to feel safe. See, emotional intimacy, there has to be emotional safety first. So all these couples are like, I want emotional intimacy. Okay, but to get there, you have to create emotional safety. But if we're judging, minimizing, critical, name calling, avoiding, avoiding is like, you don't even care about me. You don't even care about our marriage, right? So you want to nurture that relationship. And by the way, that goes hand in hand with your kids. Mm-hmm. If you want your kids to be emotionally intimate with you, right? You have to provide an emotionally safe environment for them. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
So do you guys love and respect the cycle? Do you guys agree with that? And if you do, how do you respect someone when you just don't respect them? I'm just speaking like for people that have messaged me.
I feel like it's an oversimplified pattern of like, oh, well, you need love and then he needs respect and go back and forth. And I don't want to be critical at all, but I do think that there's more to it in like building emotional intimacy, safety. I think we're all looking for safety and security in our relationships. And we also are looking for that sense of being significant in each other's lives, right? We want to make an impact in other people's lives. We want to leave a legacy of love. And I think that those are probably the most important. I think we're both looking for love and respect, not one or the other.
Yeah, we're very strong components. I'm not a fan of that book only because I want respect and I want love. And so does Casey. Yeah. So I think don't we want both? No, I want both. Yeah. So, you know, it's not that he says that we don't want both, but I think that there's a major focus on the gender with the respect and the love, and it goes hand in hand. And I understand that, but it's missing some components.
I love hearing different opinions. And something that goes along with that is like everything you read, like there's so much more to it. You know, you don't have to agree with everything that you read, and you can, like for you guys, like I look up to you, I admire you. I'm like, I want to know what you have to think.
And let me say this, even people listening to your podcast, we have a 90-10 rule. If 90% of the time you're like, wow, that's great. It's inspirational. That's helpful. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And 10%, maybe you don't agree. And you're like, oh, I listened to an episode and it didn't really resonate with me, or, oh, wow, I don't agree with that. That's okay. You want to be careful when it's the other side, when you're following someone or you're reading a book or you're going to a therapist and you're like, 90% of the time, I don't agree with them, or something's not sitting right. Trust your gut, right? And so it's impossible. Studies and research have been done to agree with one person 100% of the time. It's not going to happen. So we have to go into, even with our children, our marriage, the things we watch, the relationships we have at work, we are going to have conflict.
Half the time, I don't even agree with what I just said. I'm like, really? Okay, well, whatever. But we do live in a cancel culture. Like, you said this one thing and you're done. Yeah. It's like, we need to have ability to have a critical mind of, hey, I can take this. I can take the good, block the bad.
Yeah. And see, people, we're humans. Like Casey said, we're doing the best we can. Some days we win, some days we don't. Yeah. But I think that in the decision-making, it's really hard for people who really are motivated by fairness. I don't know if you've ever done anything about the Enneagram, but I'm an Enneagram 8, which is pretty rare for a female. There's only
That's my husband. Is that a challenger or no?
Yes, that's a challenger.
Okay.
Yes.
Seven.
So it's typically
seven right here.
Woohoo, Brendan.
Yeah. I'm seven and nine.
The party.
Okay. So so eights are usually male. And so they're not usually female. So I already struggle with that alone, but we're really into, justice and fairness and the truth and things like that. So decision-making, in that video, we actually talk about how we decided not to have any more kids because we didn't agree on it for years.
Yeah.
And so we use that as an example to say, he wanted more, I didn't want any more. And so we walk you through steps on
I can't wait to listen to that.
Because I'm someone who, I always tell ladies, I really like fairness.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go out with a bang. Could you guys share with everybody about your sex challenge?
Whoa.
I wish they could have heard our conversation before we started recording, because it was gold.
You mean about swallowing versus spitting?
Oh, yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Share all the info about that.
Okay. Well, the story goes this. Megan's into like introducing challenges into a relationship. Like, she would do fitness challenges. We did the whole 30. That went horrible because I started crashing halfway through the month and I did like a grand mal temper tantrum because I was like, I need food now.
Yeah.
But the one challenge that I heard about that I introduced to the relationship was this idea of having 7 days of sex. I was like, are you kidding? This sounds like
a surprise. That sounds like something a guy would come up with.
I was like, this isn't even a challenge. We got this, right? We're done. This is like, let's just start at day one and just call it a, whatever.
And this was before Marriage 365. And in the 7 day sex challenge that we have now filmed, and it's in our membership, we talk about, like, it's a very funny story, but this idea came from, what if couples start committing to things like this? And so it's not like, oh, I have to have sex every day for like a month or 5 months. It's like, just a week, just try it.
30 day sex challenge?
Yeah. I mean, we've never done a 30 day. We actually just came out with a 4 day kissing challenge, which is going to be awesome. And so we actually offer a ton of different challenges at Marriage 365.
I like it.
So we have a positivity challenge. We have a newlywed challenge. We have, what's another challenge? Oh, a wife challenge, a husband challenge. So it's just some kind of a way to jumpstart something in your life that you want to get back on track.
21 day choosing love.
Yes. We have a 21 day
I choose love. Newlywed challenge. Okay. So but here's the thing. Here's the whole point of the sex challenge. Can you have sex for 7 days in a row? And honestly, like, again, we're talking about it now. Sounds like, well, that's kind of easy, right?
All the men are like, yeah, heck yeah.
But right now, like, being completely TMI, like, I'm in my third trimester of pregnancy. I'm so horny and my husband loves it, but right, I'm like, on, just soak it up, because after we have this baby, like, then it's totally different.
Here's the thing. That's so weird. So I was super horny postpartum. Like, what?
I've never had that, but always in my third trimester, I'll wake him up in the middle of the night. He's like, let's go.
That's why I needed another baby, babe. Let's go. I want this postpartum horniness. Like, well, here's the thing though.
I'm down for your sex challenge, but postpartum I may not be, but I'll need it probably 6 weeks postpartum.
Not to change tones here, but the sad reality is actually that a lot of couples aren't having a lot of sex.
Yeah.
And that's actually more the norm than anything else. We hear it all the time on DMs. It's actually quite amazing how honest and vulnerable people are on a DM on Instagram and telling their story. And, you know, more often than not, we're not hearing stories of like, hey, we have sex all the time. It's great. It's actually like, no, we're not having sex much at all. And in fact, it's most of the wives saying, I want to have more sex than my husband. And I don't understand what's happening. And I think, again, we unpack some of the reasons why, the challenges that people have in getting it on in the bedroom. And a lot of it, I'll just give you the punchline, a lot of it has to deal with all the issues outside the bedroom. Mm-hmm. When you deal with the emotional intimacy, the safety, the trust, you deal with, hey, we're having date nights regularly. We're blocking and tackling our schedule with our kids. We're making each other a priority. Or, you know, you picked up a pack of mints or my favorite coffee drink on the way back from home. Like, all those little things add up to making what happens in the bedroom exciting and explosive and all that we've wanted it to be, but it's all the issues outside the bedroom. And so to have a 7 days of sex is actually a challenge for a lot of couples.
It is.
I love how fun though. It's like a 7 day challenge for sex, but then also you guys dig deeper and get to the root of, okay, what's going on? Why aren't you guys having sex as much as you would like to?
So how these challenges work is there's like a 2 to 3 minute video. We give a specific technique that you can try in the bedroom and then you go have sex. So that's how it is. And it's 7 days in a row. And so for all of our challenges, they're shorter videos. You get one specific technique. And then the goal would be, of course, to try to do that. And so all of those things, the 4-step apology, the weekly marriage business meeting, the number one resource we have is our membership. That's what we do at Marriage 365. I mean, we offer online coaching and we have lots of other resources, but it is definitely the most bang for your buck. And we are the largest
bang for your buck.
We are the largest online streaming service for relationships and marriage. So there's just so much content. We add new stuff every single month.
Yeah. I will put all the links in the show notes. I'm so grateful. This is probably my longest episode. Usually I do them really short because it's busy moms, but there is nothing that you guys said that was wasted. It was so powerful and I'm so grateful. And I just appreciate you guys so much. So thank you for joining us.
Yes. Brooklyn, it was so good to be on. And hey, invite us back. We could do a whole podcast about sex.
Oh, I would love it. My husband would love it. I'm sure everyone would love it. I mean, I put the sex question box and people went crazy. So people like talking about sex, even if they're not having it. They want to know, how do I have more of it? And how do I want to have it? So, okay, you guys have a great day. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Brooklyn.
Thank you.